Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
We're reading today Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavat Puran, Section 8, Canto 8, Chapter 22, Verse 27. The chapter is entitled Bali Maharaj Surrenders His Life.
Manastamba Nimitanam Janma Dinam Samam Tataha Sarvastraya Pratitpanam Anta Muyena Matparaha.
Mana, of false prestige. Samba, because of this impudence. Nimitanam, which are the causes. Janma adinam, such as birth in a high family. Samantataha, taken together. Sarvashreya, for the supreme benefit of life. Pratipanam, which are impediments. Hanta, also. Muyet, becomes bewildered. Na, not. Matparaha, my pure devotee. Translation, by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The translation is, although aristocratic birth and other such opulences are impediments to advancing in devotional service because they are causes of prestige and pride, these opulences never disturb a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If we can repeat the verse in sections responsively. Although aristocratic birth and other such opulences are impediments to advance in devotional service because they are causes of false prestige and pride. These opulences never disturb a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Devotees like Dhruva Maharaj, who was given unlimited material opulence, have the special mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Once, Kuvera wanted to give Dhruva Maharaj a benediction, but although Dhruva Maharaj could have asked him for any amount of material opulence, he instead begged Kuvera that he might continue his devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When a devotee is fixed in his devotional service, there is no need for the Lord to deprive him of his material opulences. The Supreme Personality of Godhead never takes away material opulences achieved because of devotional service, although He sometimes takes away opulences achieved by pious activities. He does this to make a devotee prideless or to put him in a better position in devotional service. If a special devotee is meant for preaching but does not give up his family life or material opulences to take to the service of the Lord then surely takes away his material opulences and establishes him in devotional service. Thus, the pure devotee becomes fully engaged in propagating Krishna consciousness. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvisesa Sunyavadi Paskacha Desatarani Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Shri Gadadhar Srivas Adi Gaur Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayat. Each verse of the Srimad Bhagavat Puran is highly instructive. The Bhagavat Purana is considered to be the spotless Puran because it does not deal with any of the subjects, any of the influences of the three modes of material nature, sattva, rajas, and tamas. Instead, the Bhagavat Puran purely deals with the subject matter of bhakti, of pure devotional service, of cultivating pure love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is our constitutional position, which is the only reason that we, members of the jiva category, the minute particles of spiritual existence, the only reason for our existence. Srila Prabhupada came to the Western countries, specifically to New York, in 1965. He had a mission to establish an understanding of bhakti, an understanding that the spirit soul, the minute spirit soul, is eternally different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Western world, there have been approximately 200 English translations of Bhagavad Gita, as well as various translations in other European languages, but all of these translations were given the false impression that somehow or other the individual soul wallowing in material existence, somehow or other he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Srila Prabhupada was very determined. This was his life's work. And now as an old man, he was undertaking this task to somehow or other, alone, by himself, to establish in the Western world the concept of bhakti, the concept of loving devotion, the concept of love and gratitude for the individual soul towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And with this in mind, he started to work on his purports of the Bhagavad Gita. He completed this in 1967, and by 1968, Collier Macmillan published Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita in an abridged form, and then again in its entire form in 1972. Srila Prabhupada, after completing Bhagavad Gita, he again worked on Srimad Bhagavat Puran. The Bhagavat Puran, which he intended to publish in 60 volumes, he had completed 3 volumes while living in Vrindavan and Delhi prior to coming to the United States in 1965. He had completed 3. There was over 50 volumes which needed to be translated and to write purports for. And this particular volume that we are reading from today, this particular section, they say canto, this particular section, the 8th canto of the 12 cantos, this was finished, this was completed in September of 1976. So, in the 10 years, 11 years since coming to USA, United States, from India, in 9 years since the Bhagavad Gita was printed by Collier Macmillan, Srila Prabhupada, he was systematically translating and publishing through the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust, which he founded specifically for translating his works. So these volumes were created, were published one by one. So this particular volume, Prabhupada was working on this during 1976, and it was published on, it was finished in September 1st, which was Radhastami. So here we found that Bali Maharaj, in this particular verse, this particular section, Bali Maharaj, this chapter, Bali Maharaj, he's bound by ropes. He has been bound by ropes since the end of the last chapter. When he granted the 3 steps of land to Vamana Dev, and Vamana Dev, by his mystical poti, he expanded almost to the size of the universe, and he took everything within the 3 worlds from Bali Maharaj, who was ruling the entire planetary systems. So when this happened, Shukracharya, the guru who was advising against this, and when Bali Maharaj's army, when they saw the trick that had been done, they rushed with their lances, with their spears, to attack Vamanadeva. The associates of Vishnu, they rallied forth, they defended Vamanadeva against the attack. And Garuda, he appeared on the scene, and he bound Vamanadeva with ropes of Varuna. Varuna was one of the Adityas. His father was Kasyapa Muni. His mother was Aditya. He got the service of being Lord of the Waters, Lords of the Sea. Later in Krishna book, we read how Nanda Maharaj was taken into the waters to spirited away to the deep ocean, to the kingdom of Varuna. Varuna carries a rope, a pasha, and this rope he uses because since the Rig Veda, it has been mentioned that Varuna, he is the guardian of moral law. So it's very fitting that Garuda used this rope to bind Bali Maharaj, because he was considered to have erred. He was considered to have transgressed Moro Ro. This rope was also given by Varuna to Arjun when Arjun decided that he was going to go to the higher planetary systems, to the systems of the Devalokas. And this is recorded in the Mahabharata, in the Vani Parva, chapter 41, verse 47. There is this Leela of Arjun going to the higher planetary systems, accompanied by Varuna's Pasha, by his rope, by his noose. If we see Murtis of Ganesh, Ganesh also carries a pasha. The rope of Ganesh can pull away impediments from our path. Yamaraj, he also carries a pasha, a rope. And this rope, the Yamadutas and himself use at times to rip, to tear the soul of the living entity out of its material body when it's too attached to material circumstances and doesn't want to give up the body at the time of death. So, these ropes are very powerful, and we can conclude quite safely that Bali Maharaj was very well secured. He was entirely bound up. He was tethered by Garuda using Varuna's rope in the presence of Vamanadeva and the Shukracharya and the demonic armies. So the question is, why was he bound? He had agreed to give the two steps, the three steps of land, two which had already been taken, and the third which was yet to be taken. So why was he bound? He was compliant. He went against the order of his guru. He went against the cries of the Asuras, who had worked for so many years to capture, to rule the entire three planetary systems. Immediately he gave it up at the request of Vamanadeva, although his guru was telling him, this is a trick, this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we're going to lose from this. He was compliant, he was obedient, he was happy to do so. So the question arises, why was he bound up? Vamanadeva had said to him, after the two steps, he said, you have promised me three steps. So how now is it possible for you to grant a third step when I already have taken everything you own? So, you have in fact made a false promise. This false promise, parisruttam, what has been promised, you cannot make good on this promise. Therefore, you have been telling untruths. And for this, you should be sent to Nirayam, to the hellish planets. Nirayam, they are mentioned in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 5:26-29. And here in this section, 5:21, verses 32 and 34. The heavenly planets are described, where people go for a variety of offenses. And Vamanadeva was saying, you should also go for this offense of not being truthful. He said, katichit, for a few samaha, a few years. Regarding this being bound, and regarding this punishment which Vamanadeva was proclaiming, a number of personalities had a comment, had an opinion on this. First of all, Prahlad Maharaj, the paternal grandfather of Bali. Bali was Prahlad Maharaj's grandson. He came to speak on his behalf. He said, "My Lord, everything is yours. So by your hand, you are giving individuals opulence, and by your will, you are taking it away. You have given Bali everything he has, and now you have taken it away." He said, "Bali's exalted, his supreme position has made him attached to his situation. This attachment, this is a symptom of the mode of ignorance. So something you gave him has caused him to go to the mode of ignorance, to be subjected to the mode of ignorance, and this has been a very merciful favor by you to clarify his position, to give the means by which he can come out of the mode of ignorance." So Prahlad Maharaj, he was saying that what you have done to relieve him of this burden of labor under false concepts of tamagun, this is sufficient. This is sufficient. Let this be enough. He said, "Material opulence is always bewildering. And even, what to speak of someone like Bali Maharaj, who's the commander-in-chief of the demons, of the Asuras," he said, "even a self-realized person, even a self-controlled person, he can become bewildered by material opulence." And this was his argument, that it should be sufficient punishment for Bali Maharaj to have voluntarily forfeited everything by giving in gift the two steps of land to the Supreme Personality, although it seemed that it was not possible to give the third step. Bali's wife, Lord Brahma, he was about to speak. But Bali's wife, she was so agitated, she was so concerned, this was her husband. So she became excited and she spoke, she interrupted Lord Brahma, who was about to speak. She said, "My dear Lord," she said, "you have created this material world purely for your pastimes. Everything you've done here is purely for your pastimes, for your lila, for your own enjoyment. So everything that happens here is indirectly caused by you." She said, "Foolish, unintelligent persons," she said, "they claim ownership of this material world which you have created solely for your pastimes." She said, "these shameless," Prabhupada translates the term as agnostics, "these shameless agnostics," she said, "they misuse this freedom, this facility that they have." She is arguing, she uses the word agnostic, which comes from the Greek, and it means people who claim they do not have enough knowledge to make a judgment about what is the source of the material world, or whether there are any divine personalities connected to the creation or the running of the material world. She's saying that there are people like my husband who just don't have enough knowledge to know what they're doing, to understand that there's divine personalities, and therefore to act appropriately with respect to them. She is arguing that he is foolish, you should just release him. Lord Brahma, seeing the mood of Prahlad Maharaj, and also Prahlad Maharaj's grandson's wife, that they are pleading to release him in the presence of his grandfather, Prahlad Maharaj, Bali feels very shameful. He cannot move very much. He's completely bound up by these mystical ropes. But he's bowing his head in shame. Lord Brahma, seeing the attitude of Prahlad Maharaj and his wife, he addresses Vamanadeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He says quite clearly, this man, referring to Bali Maharaj, has been sufficiently punished. He said, you have taken everything. And now he has even offered his body. He describes offering even a leaf, a flower, to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in the purport, Prabhupada quite correctly connects this with the Bhagavad Gita verse, chapter 9, verse 26. Patram pushvam talam phayam. That if even one offers a leaf, a fruit, some water, a flower to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in a mood of surrender, then the Supreme Personality of Godhead is pleased. What to speak of Bali, who has offered his head as the footstep of the third step which he has promised to give Lord Vamana. The Supreme Personality of Godhead continues. He said, material opulences makes a person mad. He loses his intelligence. By mad, we understand that a person cannot understand the situation as it truly is. That material opulence can bewilder a person. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, when a person is opulent, when he's suffering from delusion, he can be in a position where he has no respect. He has no respect for others, and he has no respect for the divine arrangement that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has structured within the material world. The Supreme Personality continued. He says, there are so many species, and by the laws, by the structure, by the mechanism of samsara, the living entity, he transmigrates from one body to another, and if somehow or other, eventually, he obtains the human form of life, he said, this is very rare. And off the rare condition of the human form of life, he describes in the verse just prior to the verse we're reading today, he says that if a person gets a birth in a good family, with a beautiful body, with wealth, the facilities for education, with health and stamina, this is considered to be a very wonderful birth to take. In this verse, then he continues, although aristocratic birth and other opulences are impediments to advancement in devotional service, because they're causes of false prestige and pride, still, these opulences never disturb a pure devotee who is using the opulences to propagate pure devotional service. So, each verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam is giving a lesson. And we must personally apply these lessons in our life so that we can advance in devotional service, so that we can properly utilize the facility that has been created for us within the material world by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by God Himself. So we must evaluate each situation in our life, and we must evaluate this verse. The verse is saying that by rare fortune we can attain opulence and position in this life, but these are impediments to pure devotional service. One time in Bombay, Giriraj Das Brahmachari, he was in charge of collecting, finding the money to build a very, very grand temple. And at a particular time, it wasn't working out so well. He was struggling to bring in the funds which were needed for a schedule of payments to build the place. He spoke to Srila Prabhupada in Juhu amidst the construction, and he said, there just isn't enough facility to build the temple at the rate at which you want it built. Srila Prabhupada said, he said, Krishna, he tests us in two ways. He said he tests us by giving us nothing. He also tests us by giving us everything. He said, when I was young, in my household life, he said, Krishna, he gave me nothing. He said, and this was Krishna's test. Although with nothing, although with very little to show for his years of endeavor of trying to build up a successful business so he could comfortably perform his pure devotional service, he said, Krishna gave me nothing. He said, this was Krishna's test. He said, now I'm an old man. He said, Krishna has given me everything. He said, this is also Krishna's test. I was traveling to Vrindavan one time with a very dear friend of mine, a gentleman older than me. He's from Jamaica. He came to England to join his father, who had been there for some years. He came when he was 12 years old. So he was very much Jamaican in his attitude, in his understanding, his mentality. And he is a very wonderful devotee. He preaches very nicely, he is very wise, he gives counsel to devotees, and he's very attached to chanting the holy names. So we came to Delhi by train, and by Mathura railway station, we climbed into one of these shared auto rickshaws, and we squeezed in the back, There's like 12, 16 people traveling one of these. We squeezed into two seats on the far edge of the seats beside the window, beside the door. And other people climbed in. It was crowded and we set off for Vrindavan. He had his eyes closed and his hand in his beads and he was very attentively focusing on the sound of the holy names as he was chanting. He just loved to chant all day long. He had a very, very nice taste for chanting. The Brijbasi gentleman who was squeezed in beside me, he was looking at him for some time, and then when he caught my attention, he said, "Is he sadhu?" I said, "No, he's not sadhu. He is great Maharaj." He went, "Oh." He said, "He looks like sadhu. He is Maharaj." So I said, "Okay, how do you distinguish between sadhu and Maharaj? What do you feel is the difference?" He said, "A Maharaj in Vrindavan is the Mahant who's in charge of the ashram." He said, "He's in charge of the property. He runs everything. He controls everything." He said, "And now, because Vrindavan has become very popular, so many pilgrims are coming," he said, "most of the ashrams are very wealthy." He said, "There is so much property. There are so many donations. There is so much vehicles, so much cash, so much wealth." He said, "So we Brijbasis, we do not know who is the genuine Maharaj. Is he Maharaj looking after the Mahant, looking after the running the ashram nicely, or is he a businessman?" He said, "We don't know, because there's just so much wealth involved, we do not know what is his motivation." He said, "But the sadhu, he has given up everything except his relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which he revels in by the constant chanting of the holy names." He said, "The sadhu, maybe he has a blanket, maybe he has a water pot, but principally he has his japamala." He said, "So we can see exactly what is the sadhu." I said, "Oh." I said, "So in Vrindavan, who gets the respect?" "Sadhu." He said, "We respect the sadhu." He said, "We give deference to the Mahants, to the ashram in charge." He said, "Because we don't know and we don't want to commit any apparat. So cautiously we respect them, but we don't know what is his motivation. But the sadhu is very, very clear." He said, "So in Vrindavan, the sadhus, they get the respect." So, it's not by our appearance, it's not by the appearance of others that we can determine what is their spiritual attainment, what is the purity in their heart. So many retired persons, they come to Vrindavan and immediately they wear the dress of sadhus, they wear the dress of sannyasis, in order to live and to perhaps get donations, perhaps live nicely. But it's not the dress itself that determines, that can indicate what is the spiritual attainment. So, this verse is saying, and in the purport, Prabhupada says, two things. He said, first of all, he said, material opulence is largely a deterrent to pure, humble bhakti, because we tend to get proud. We tend to get arrogant. We tend to get puffed up, and we forget our constitutional service position as an infinitesimal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He also says in the verse, and in Srila Prabhupada's purport, it says that for the pure devotee of the Lord, he is not influenced by material opulence, but he simply uses this for pure devotional service. So, each verse in Srimad Bhagavatam has a lesson. And the lesson of this verse is Hare Krishna, Hare Bhav, sit down, sit. Mat karo. Someone's wandering around there. So, the lessons of this verse, hey, so the lesson of this verse is twofold. Number one, that we should not aspire for material opulence, and any opulence which we do have, we should understand this can be an impediment. And secondly, we should aspire to become pure devotees, not as regarded by others according to our position within the hierarchy, within the structure of our particular ashram, but within our hearts, we should apply the process, the nine processes of pure devotional service, so that we can qualify for the mercy of the pure, of pure devotional service from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so that we can graduate beyond the sadhana, beyond the regulative practices, and we can genuinely have a spontaneous taste for loving and for serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and any opulence which comes our way, any material facilities which come our way, we use these purely to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead and to attract others who are not so fortunate and don't have the mercy which we have been bestowed upon us, to give us the realization in which we have. In other words, we use the opulence which we attain to be very compassionate upon the ordinary members of society who are still struggling within the three modes of material nature. Lord Chaitanya, he described and demonstrated that the most efficient way of purifying the jivas who are struggling within the three modes of material nature is the congregational chanting of the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Now, does anyone have any comments or any questions regarding the subject matter of this verse? One moment, please. I shall give you a microphone. Yes, my dear sir.
Prabhu, you were giving the example of soul. You never want to give the body. And
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
The soul doesn't want to give the body.
Yep.
So Varuna brought the ropes to remove the soul from the body. So how we can understand this soul doesn't want to give the body? When the time of death comes, so Atma and Paramatma both are together. So can you explain something about the body?
The question, very nice question. The question is, I made a reference to Yamaraj and the Yamadutas, his followers, that they, Yama, the deity of Yama, is also depicted as having a pasha, having a rope, having a noose in his hand. This rope is used, often used, by the Yamadutas who forcibly tear the jiva, the subtle body of the jiva. They tear it from the gross body at the time of death because often the individual soul is reluctant to leave his body. And this very nice devotee has asked me, why is this so? Why is the jiva reluctant to leave his body? I would like to answer the question like this. Generally, the living entity, even after having come through the process of transmigration to the human form of life, which affords the facility to understand intellectually what is the position of the spirit soul within the material world. Because Krishna himself explains, yada yada hi dharmasya, that again and again he comes to the material world to give spiritual instructions. And we can understand that the various religions of the world, the various religious systems, the various philosophies, religious philosophies of the world, they are there to give spiritual instructions to the individual soul. Now we who have taken to the process of Vaishnavism, of worship of Krishna, we can understand that the Vaishnav theology, this is like 24 karat pure gold. This is entirely pure and entirely complete. And from that perspective, the other religious systems, the other philosophical systems, which are being advocated by other groups, although true, aren't completely true. It's like gold which has been, it's not pure gold, it's of some, it's still gold, but it's of a lesser quality. It's not 24 carat, it's 12, it's 18, it's 22. And so, nevertheless, there are religious instructions for people to follow. But in spite of this, if a living entity decides that he doesn't want to use this human form of life to elevate himself at least to the heavenly planets. In this regard, one very nice devotee who unfortunately has passed away, nice devotee in England by the name of Tribhuvanath, one time in Delhi, when we had a small temple in Todarmal Lane, he asked Srila Prabhupada, he said, Srila Prabhupada, he said, the scientists are saying that the world is becoming overpopulated by people. He said, is this so? And Srila Prabhupada said, yes. He said, in Kali Yuga, in this dark age in which we are living now, He said the world becomes very overpopulated by people. Because the idea is that once we reach this human form of life, we should further progress, and minimum, we should go to the heavenly planets. He said, but in Kali Yuga, people are so sinful, they are so bereft of sufficient pious activity to take a higher form, what to speak in the material world, what to speak of leaving the material world altogether. He said, so because of this, he said, they come again and again to the material world, and it is becoming very, very heavily overpopulated. So in this atmosphere of people coming to this human form of life simply to enjoy the facilities and of material sense gratification and working very, very hard, the whole world, every person in every country in the whole world, with a very few exceptions, they are working very hard to improve their situation within this material world, and they are very comfortable to some extent with what they have attained. They have some house, they have some family, they have some wealth, they have some foodstuffs, they have some facility. They have some facility. And so they became very attached to this. At the end of their life, at 50, at 60 or 70 years old, if they're fortunate enough to live this long, at the end of this time, they have a situation which they have improved upon, the situation for enjoyment by which they first began. So now they want to enjoy this situation, their family life, and so on and so on. They're very reluctant to leave it, but when the time of death comes and it's necessary for them to leave, they must go to their next body, their next situation, which they have created by the consciousness which they have developed in this life. Then they are very reluctant to leave, and so often they must be forced to leave by the Yamadutas, who forcibly carry them to their next bodily situation. Yes, bro. Thank you very much. He wants to make one more point. Yes, please.
About Ali Maharaj's wife, she's speaking to God that she will make this temple for your mission. So, whatever the cause of wrong causes are there, so can you explain what happened?
The second point he made, which I'm going to speak on very quickly, the bells have rung, it's 9 o'clock, there are other programs which are taking place now. The question which he answered was, the wife of Bali Maharaj, she says to the Lord, you have created this material world, you have created the situations within the material world. You have created the availability of wealth, which my husband has acquired. So how is he to blame? What is his fault in this? Is this your question? Yes. This is her husband, who, up until now, he has just become more and more important, more and more powerful. He has subjugated more and more people, the entire planetary systems under his domain. She is the number one lady, the wife of the number one man in the entire universe. You can imagine how much wealth she has, how much jewelry, how much expensive clothing, how the palaces she lives in, how they're decorated, how many servants she has, and different types of servant from different species, from different planets. And when she invites her friends around, oh, please come around for tea, please. And they cannot believe the opulence. There is such envy when they see this, and she is so proud. She is just so proud of her situation. She's so thankful to her husband. She also is thinking, this is going to last forever. And then suddenly, this little Brahmin boy comes, a little dwarf. He has wooden shoes. He has a little umbrella, probably made of bamboo and leaves. He has a simple water pot, a tiny little person. He asks for 3 steps of land. Generally, we can measure a normal-sized person if he paces to the largest he can pace. Generally, this is a meter. So you can measure the distance of something more or less 95% accurate by taking large paces. 1, 2, this is 20 meters by 30 meters. You can calculate his value, more or less. But here we have a very small boy who, even by the standards of other people, he is small in stature. We see some tribes, some communities in Delhi, in India. They are small people, very, very small people. Small husbands, small wife, small children. So if one of these small people were to take 3 paces, it's just really enough to lie down. To lie down, to have a pillow, to have your bag, that's all the land there is. So it seemed a very simple request, give the three paces of land. The guru saying, this is a trick, this is, don't do this, look, this, you know. And he says, 3 paces, I have everything. He's come in the midst of me doing this Rajasuya sacrifice, a big sacrifice, to proclaim my dominance over everything. And at this auspicious time, he's asking me for something. He's asking me for a few coins. Something very simple. I can easily give. It adds to my stature. It adds to my reputation. And then suddenly, within a few moments, he's lost everything. He's bound in ropes. In a very short space of time. And the wife, suddenly she's a beggar, suddenly she's a pauper, suddenly she has no protector. Srila Prabhupada says, the mind is the best lawyer. That the mind, attached to some enjoyment, we can compose an argument for any situation. We see the Western countries who are crazy after the facilities for the commodities which are in the rest of the world. They come with their armies, they conquer, but instead of saying, we're so greedy, we want everything these people have, we don't care if we impoverish them, we don't care if there's food, instead of being honest and saying that, we're going to take this and we don't care about the consequences. We're going to take your food. We're going to take your cloth. We're going to take your timber. We're going to take, nowadays, we're going to take your oil. We're going to take your water. We're going to take your, we don't care about your situation. We're completely disregard. This is how insensitive and demoniac we are. No, they don't say this. They have to give some reason. They say, we are introducing a religion to these people. These people, practically, they're savages. They will be subject to eternal damnation. They will never be with God because they're not following the proper religion. So we have come to educate these people, to take them away from their savage ways, to destroy their false gods, to give them religion. This is why we have come. We are being very kind to these people. Even they use this excuse when they would go to Africa with the slave ships and to capture the people at gunpoint, to chain them. You have seen in India in the unreserved carriage of the railway. You see how many people squeeze in because they haven't taken the trouble to reserve their tickets. This was the condition of the slave ships. There was this many people squeezed in, the whole ship. They had maybe 1,500 people squeezed into a very small ship, practically on top of each other. And many people would die from suffocation, from lack of food. They would just throw the bodies over the other side. They took them to the Americas and they said, "We are introducing these people to kind owners in Christian plantations so their souls can be saved." Nowadays, when they are attacking countries to get their oil, they say, "We are introducing democracy to these countries. These people, they have evil dictators, and the people are suffering. The people are sending us private messages. You please come and help us. You please come and..." So we are here simply to establish democracy. Now, because it has cost us so many trillions of dollars to come with our armies to establish democracy, then of course we must be reimbursed by taking some oil for some time to balance our accounts. So, the mind is the best lawyer, and the mind can come up with any excuse in order to get what we want. So, the wife of Bali, who in many respects was probably as a big an enjoyer as he was, she is horrified at what has happened, and at least she wants her husband released. So she uses this argument: "Oh God, Vamana, Supreme Person, you have created the material world, you have created all the mechanisms in the world, you have created a situation where a person can rise to fame, where he can attain everything. He has simply done this because the facility was available. If it wasn't him, it would be someone else. So you please, he has only done what was very natural to do. It's not his fault. He is not to blame. You please release him." This is her husband. Of course she's going to say this. Hare Krishna.